The following program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Fitchburg, Leominster, Lancaster, Lunenburg, Townsend, Ashby, Ashburnham, Devens, Westminster, Shirley, and Groton. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts and the Lions Clubs of Fitchburg and Lunenburg. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. During the next hour, we'll be reading from the Sentinel and Enterprise newspaper. This is Priscilla Lanigan, along with Stacey Lanier, reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. Okay, first up today, Fitchburg East Rotary, active in the summer. Involved in an international project, Flower Boxes Community Initiative. This from Fitchburg, as I said. Fitchburg East Rotary member Annie Namazi is proud to be helping coordinate an international project that the local club is organizing. The Lowell resident, who used to work in Leominster, is part of the team organizing the drilling of several water wells in Mengo, Uganda. The Fitchburg East Rotary's sister club, Rotary Club of Mengo, is working with them and Namazi on the project for the area villages, considering many of the villages have to walk miles to get clean, fresh water. In other Fitchburg East Rotary news, new co-presidents, Megan Driscoll and Ray Mahon, were recently installed, replacing Bob Campbell and Sabrina Kublik. In addition, the club's annual sponsor, a flower box initiative, is currently underway, and locals are invited to participate. Fitchburg East Rotary recently installed two new co-presidents. Co-presidents Ray Mahon and Megan Driscoll, Rotary District 7910, Assistant Governor Karen Fusco, and outgoing co-presidents Bob Campbell and Sabrina Kublik. Each year, Fitchburg East Rotary partners with volunteers, local businesses, and community members to plant and maintain flower boxes throughout the city's downtown area. The cheerful displays help create a welcoming atmosphere for residents and visitors, and for $200, people can sponsor a flower box for the season and show their support for the community. Whether you're a local business, organization, family, or individual, we'd love to have you be a part of this project, Fitchburg East Rotary recently posted on social media. Thank you for helping us make Fitchburg bloom. Sponsorships help cover the costs of flowers, soil, supplies, and ongoing maintenance, and includes a plaque recognizing the sponsorship that the donor can help design. For more information, message the Fitchburg East Rotary Facebook page or email fitchburgeastrotary@gmail.com. And also from Fitchburg, police ID victim in fatal motorcycle accident. Family mourns in GoFundMe page. The Fitchburg Police Department have identified the person who died in the fatal motorcycle accident last week on Ashby State Road, Route 31, as Sean Clapper, 44, of Fitchburg. The crash occurred at 3:29 p.m. on Saturday, July 11th. Police said Clapper was transported to a local hospital, where he was pronounced deceased a short time later. Police said a car was also involved in the accident, but no further details about how the crash occurred were available. Police said they're still investigating the crash. A GoFundMe page has been established by Wendy Lopez to help pay for funeral expenses, which has raised $10,933 of the $12,000 goal through 77 donations. Our family is devastated by the sudden and tragic loss of my beloved brother, who passed away following a motorcycle accident, was written on the GoFundMe page. This heartbreaking loss has left us in shock, and we are struggling to come to terms with life without him. My brother was deeply loved by so many. He brought laughter, strength, and kindness into the lives of everyone who knew him. He wasn't just a brother. He was a son, a family member, a friend, and someone whose presence made a lasting impact. His memory will live on in the hearts of those who loved him. As we navigate this unimaginable loss, we are also facing the unexpected financial burden of funeral and burial expenses. We are asking for help so we can give him the respectful and meaningful farewell he deserves. Any contribution, no matter how small, will go directly toward his funeral and burial costs. Thank you for your prayers, your kindness, and your generosity. Your love and support remind us that we are not facing this alone, and we are forever grateful for everyone helping us honor my brother's life and memory. Okay. And let's see. House passes bill easing pet seizure process. The idea is to end pet shop sales isn't included. This from Boston. The House has passed animal welfare legislation that envisions a new protocol to seize animals in neglect cases and also removes barriers to public housing for pet owners without imposing new restrictions on pet shops. The House Ways and Means Committee decided on Wednesday to leave out a core provision in the state bill, the Senate bill, which passed unanimously in March and banned the sale of dogs, cats, and rabbits in pet shops. An amendment by Representative Natalie Higgins, Democrat from Leominster, that sought to tack the pet shop provision into the House bill was withdrawn. It will be one of the more significant differences negotiators will have to resolve before a final version could go to the governor. The House passed the bill, S-3028, on a 151-1 vote, with Republican Representative John Gaske of Carver casting the sole no vote. Alyssa Clements, Director of Government Affairs at the Washington, D.C.-based Pet Advocacy Network, thanked the House Ways and Means Committee for protecting licensed and inspected local family-owned pet stores, which are the most transparent, regulated source for getting pets. Massachusetts families deserve safe, regulated choices on where to get their next pet, Clements said. A pet shop ban would only drive families to scammers and less regulated sources. Animal welfare advocates on Beacon Hill distributed materials in support of pet shop restrictions, saying stores in Massachusetts have sourced from commercial breeders with over 120 documented federal violations, brokers involved in puppy laundering schemes, and breeders found with puppies crammed into feces-covered cages without water. Allie Blank, director of advocacy at the Animal Rescue League of Boston, said she's optimistic conversations around pet shop restrictions will continue with the diverging House and Senate bills now likely headed for a conference committee. We're looking forward to getting this bill to the governor's desk, hopefully by the end of session, and hopefully the new rules for conference committees will make a little bit more possible. Blank told the news service following the House vote. The House bill establishes a new civil process in animal neglect cases in which law enforcement and animal control officers could petition a district court for a pet to be seized. The court could also order humane euthanasia or require capable pet owners to provide certain care to their neglected animals. Existing state law only deals with felony offenses for animal cruelty, with no misdemeanor charge available, said Representative Ted Phillips. But the Sharon Democrat said animal neglect does not always stem from a deliberate intent to harm an animal. It may involve an older adult whose physical health has declined, a person experiencing a mental health or substance use crisis, or an overwhelmed caregiver who has accumulated more animals than they can reasonably care for, Phillips said. In many of these cases, the person may no longer be able to care adequately for themselves, let alone the animals who depend on them. The legislation also creates a licensure pathway for veterinary technicians, imposing escalating fines on rideshare drivers who fail to accommodate passengers with service animals, regulates pet insurance, bans household product testing on animals when an alternative method exists, and bolsters oversight and reporting on dog kennels. Okay. And here is Sally Cragen's Pet Talk column. The question here, let's see. Dear Pet Talk, I have the time and space to foster a cat, and I am talking to a friend who wants to foster a dog. Can you help us do that? It's signed Hopeful. Dear Hopeful, bless you. Foster families are definitely needed for cats and dogs because most animal shelters are operating at capacity most of the time. Shelters try to adopt out dogs, cats, and other pets as quickly as they can to responsible individuals and families. However, every shelter has furry residents who just get overlooked by potential adopters. Pets who are used to spending their days in human company are more likely to get bored and depressed in a shelter environment. And young dogs who are surrendered because their adopter didn't or couldn't spend time training them need a lot of extra attention if they arrive at a shelter at a year or two of age. Shelter volunteers are most concerned about a furry guest who is very cold, old or in hospice, injured and needing to recuperate, or very young, such as a litter of puppies or kittens. Second Chance Animal Services in North Brookfield, which has a shelter and clinic, explains on their fostering page that we'd like to get those pets out of foster homes to help them as well as to gain more information about their personality. This is also a great opportunity to get a head start on basic training for dogs and socialization. The rule of thumb is that shelters that are looking to relocate a pet from their shelter to a home will pick up the cost of medication, food, and supplies during the length of the foster period. My family has fostered cats and dogs through the years, usually on an emergency basis, and having a separate place for the pet is usually required. Fostering can last for weeks or months, and the term foster failure is actually a badge of honor for many of us who foster a pet who turns out to be the ideal top cat or top dog in our home. Check out Second Chance Animal Services, www.secondchanceservices.org. This is for dogs and cats. Broken Tail Rescue at brokentailrescue.org, also for dogs and cats. Ahimsa Haven, which is ahimsahaven.org, and that's ahimsahaven.org for cats, and Pat Brody Shelter for Cats, which is catsontheweb.org. Also stay in touch with Street Cat Angels, streetcatangels.org, a nonprofit open to volunteers in all communities. They sometimes need emergency help fostering cats who have been rescued and are waiting to get veterinary medical care. Email streetcatangels@gmail.com. They also seek volunteers to assist with rescue activities. Okay, sounds good. Let's see. The Skill and Heart. Crocheted 13 Colonies flag on display in Leominster. The patriotic handiwork of city resident Marie Flanagan is on display at the library in the form of a crocheted version of the original 13 Colonies United States flag. The beautiful red, white, and blue with gold fringe creation will be featured through July 31st in the community room on the first floor of the Leominster Public Library at 30 West Street, coinciding with the celebration of the country's 250th birthday. According to information included in the library's July calendar events, Marie has called Leominster's West Side home the majority of her life, and her love for the city runs deep. She enjoys following Leominster events and has attended many of the strolls and fairs over the years. As a devoted knitter and crocheter, Marie has been handcrafting gifts for the people in her life for a long time and has a deep appreciation for early Americana, which is evident in the crocheted replica of the original Betsy Ross flag hanging in the library. Marie and her loved ones are delighted that her work, a treasured family heirloom, will be on display at the library through July, where her neighbors can admire the skill and heart she brings to everything she makes. Okay, and let's see, I think I probably have time for another one. Yes, the library adopts a new owl mascot. Okay, this is from Fitchburg. Fitchburg Public Library has announced the adoption of a new mascot, an owl, which is made possible with a $7,850 donation from All One Credit Union. Bank officials said this donation reflects All One Credit Union's commitment to supporting education, literacy, and community connections. As the Fitchburg Public Library building project continues, including renovations to the Wallace Building and an addition that will house the children's library and public meeting space, the mascot will become a great addition by helping to create opportunities for engagement and fun. Thanks to the generous support of All One Credit Union, our new mascot will help us connect with families in a new way, stated Deb Hinkle, director of the Fitchburg Public Library. A mascot is a memorable ambassador for the library that will bring energy and approachability to every event we attend, from school visits to community celebrations. The new owl mascot showcases the Fitchburg Public Library logo on the front and the All One Credit Union logo on the sleeve, adding a recognizable presence at events and representing our community partnership. This new owl mascot will represent the entire library. The Fitchburg Public Library will invite the community to share name ideas throughout the summer at various events and through social media engagement, with the final selection announced in the fall. To learn more about the library and its current renovation and expansion project, visit fitchburgpubliclibrary.org. Okay, it's a little after 4:15. We'll take a short break now, and Stacy will have more after this.
Would you like to hear news from Charlton, Southbridge, and Sturbridge that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Wednesday at 5 p.m.
Welcome back to Community News for the community surrounding Fitchburg and Leominster on Audio Journal. And it's obituary time. We'll begin with Sally Ann Dutton. And this is from Big Stone Gap, Virginia. Sally Ann Dutton passed away on July 9th at home. She was born in Gardner on April 7th, 1945, attended Oakmont High School in Westminster. She was employed at Naukeag Hospital for many years and worked as a medical transcriptionist later in life. She is survived by her daughter, Dr. Teresa Dutton, as well as four grandchildren, and her feline companion, Little Buddy. Sally was a loving mother and grandmother and a friend to all who knew her. She was affectionately called Grammy by many. Her services will be on July 26th in Big Stone Gap, Virginia. From Leominster, Porfirio Rodriguez Hernandez of Leominster passed away on July 12th. Services were held yesterday. And that's all the information we have. Now from Fitchburg, Bernard James O'Malley, affectionately known as Jim, passed away on July 17th at the age of 91. Born on December 22nd, 1934, in Winchendon, Bernard was a loyal, talented, generous, and loving individual who touched the lives of many. Growing up in a large Irish Catholic family, he learned the value of hard work from a young age. He recalled setting pins at the local bowling alley, caddying for golfers, and managing a paper route. These experiences, coupled with the trying circumstances of World War II, instilled in him a strong work ethic. After graduating from Murdoch High in 52, Bernard served in the Marine Corps. His later career as a steam engineer at Irving Paper spanned over four decades. A generous soul, Bernard was always there for family and friends, ready to lend a hand or a word of encouragement. His love was a beacon guiding those fortunate to know him. He survived by his daughters, Kathleen Landry, Natalie Kendall, Amy O'Malley, Patsy Smart, and his son, Brian O'Malley, as well as a special friend, Elise Clark. He also leaves eight grandchildren and six great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his wife of 60 years, Rose O'Malley. And let's see, his services were held today, but you can make a donation in his name to Toys for Tots. All right, we're going to move along to Lavina Cormier Robidoux. Lavina died peacefully at her home on July 18th. She was born on September 12, 1930, in Fitchburg. She grew up in Cleghorn as part of St. Joseph's Parish. She attended St. Joseph's Elementary School and later earned her GED while working and raising her children. Lavina married Robert Robidoux on November 12, 1949. They embarked on a journey that resulted in seven children and a home filled with love. They lived on Cross Street as part of the Immaculate Conception Parish, then on Shea Street. She worked different jobs to help support her large brood, including Cluett, Peabody, and Company. Later in life, she worked as a teller at Workers' Credit Union. Lavina entered a new phase of her life in 1993 when she married Lionel Arsenault. They lived in Fitchburg and Leominster. After Lionel's passing in 2012, Lavina lived with her daughter Karen in Fitchburg. In 2018, she moved to Bellingham to live with her son Brian, where she remained until her last day. Lavina was a talented singer and guitarist and entertained people in the Fitchburg area in her youth. She continued to sing with local churches and prayer groups. She was a person of deep faith. She was also a hopeless romantic, voraciously consuming romance novels and Hallmark movies. She loved chocolate. She looked forward to visits from her children. And she loved to watch the Patriots games, even if she never completely understood the rules. Let's see. She was predeceased by her husbands Robert Robideau in 2001 and Lionel Arsenault in 2012. She's survived by her daughter Deborah Miller of St. Johnsbury, Vermont, daughter Kathleen Jones of Athol, daughter Brenda Brassard of Fitchburg, son Brian Robideau of Bellingham, daughter Karen Hall of Fitchburg. She is also survived by two daughters-in-law, 15 grandchildren, 23 great-grandchildren, and 8 great-great-grandchildren. The family will have a private service at St. Joseph's Cemetery at a later date. All right, now on to Leominster. It's with heavy hearts that we announce the passing of Carol A. Carcitti, 87, on July 18th at Alliance Health at Baldwinville. Carol was predeceased by her husband, Dominic Carcitti. She's survived by her daughter, Bonnie Brooks, of Jacksonville, Florida, and her son, Alan Brooks, of Gardner, as well as her stepdaughters, Donna Courtemanche of Maine, and Lisa Tommen of Phillipston. She also is survived by 7 grandchildren. Carol was born in Leominster and lived there most of her life. She graduated from Leominster High, class of 56, and worked at Dental Associates in Leominster from high school until her retirement. In her retirement, she worked as a school crossing guard until age 80 and loved reading to the school children. Carol loved traveling with Dom. She enjoyed bike rides, walks outside, and New England sports. Most of all, Carol was happiest when surrounded by family at meals and gatherings. The family would like to extend a special thank you to the wonderful teams at Alliance Health at Baldwinville and Brookhaven Hospice. In memory of Carol, memorial contributions can be made to Boston Children's Hospital. Calling hours will be tomorrow, Thursday, July 23rd, from 10 to noon at the Richardson Funeral Home in Leominster, with a service immediately following at the funeral home. Burial will take place at Evergreen Cemetery in Leominster. All right. This obituary is from Lunenburg. Elsa Coppellotti Fancy, 81, of Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, formerly of Lunenburg, passed away on July 11th. Beloved wife of the late David A. Fancy, friends and family are welcome to attend the following services. Visiting hours, Thursday, July 23rd, 5 to 7, at McCarthy, McKinney, and Lawler Funeral Home in Framingham. A mass will be held Friday, July 24th at 10 a.m. at St. Patrick Church in Natick, and then a committal ceremony at 1 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Winchendon. Her celebration of life will take place at 2 p.m. at the 1761 Old Mill Restaurant in Westminster. And if you'd like to read Elsa's complete obituary, you can visit the funeral home at McCarthyFH.com. Now, back to Leominster. This obituary is for Margaret R. Marrow. She died peacefully on July 13th. She was born November 4th, 1930, in Leominster. Margaret, known to most as Peggy, was one of 12 children and remained close to her 11 siblings throughout her life. Family gatherings with them were among her greatest joys. A proud Leominster native, she graduated from Leominster High and always considered Leominster her true and beloved home. She met her husband, Carmine, near the end of World War II. After marrying, they spent several years in the Bronx, where Peggy was welcomed with open arms into Carmine's family and grew to love them. She and Carmine later returned to Leominster, where they settled and raised their family in the home that remains the family home to this day. Peggy was an amazing and loyal friend, a devoted and loving wife, mother, grandmother, and a faithful follower of Jesus Christ. Back in Leominster, Peggy and Carmine both went to work at Tucker Housewares, where she remained until the company closed its doors. She was a devoted member of St. Anna's Church in Leominster. She loved browsing stores, attending church events, spending time with her children and grandchildren, enjoying the warmth of the sun or a mild breeze, sitting with friends at the local coffee shop, and dining out with her sisters, Rosie and Teresa. After Tucker's close, she went on to work for many more years as an aide in the Leominster school system. A commanding presence, she gravitated toward leadership roles wherever she worked or volunteered. And that same strength showed in her loyalty to family and friends, as she was always the first one there when needed. Her husband, Carmine, predeceased her in 1988. She leaves her children, Anthony M. Morrow and Matthew S. Morrow. She also leaves 11 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren. She was predeceased by her husband, Carmine. Her family would like to thank the staff at the Highlands for their loving care and Dr. Kamens for his passionate dedication to our mother's well-being. Calling hours will be held Thursday, July 23rd at the Richardson Funeral Home from 5 to 7. A mass will be held Friday, July 24th at the Holy Family Church in Leominster at 11 a.m. with burial to follow in the St. Leo's Cemetery. And if you'd like more information, you can visit richardsonfuneralhome.net. All right, let's see. Let me read the obituary for Adam L. Poyer, 44, of Fitchburg, formerly of Townsend, who died unexpectedly on July 16th at his residence. Adam was born in Fitchburg on October 14th, 1981, and has resided in Fitchburg for over 20 years. He grew up in Townsend, was a 2000 graduate of North Middlesex High, and a 2004 graduate of Mount Wachusett Community College with a degree in business administration. Adam worked many years in the insurance agency, most recently as a commercial lines account executive for World Insurance Associates. Adam was a member of the Fitchburg Weightlifting Club, Crunch Fitness, Planet Fitness, and Global Fitness. He was a big car and truck enthusiast and an avid sports aficionado with a special passion for the Patriots, Bruins, and Celtics. He leaves his father, Louis R. Poirier of Fitchburg, his mother, Cheryl M. Stevenson of Dennisport, his daughter, Drea Poirier of Cranberry, Pennsylvania, his beloved fiancée, Casey Reynolds of Fitchburg, and his loving dog, Bella. His funeral will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, July 24th at the Anderson Funeral Home in Townsend Center. Calling hours are 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday in the funeral home. And if you'd like to make a donation, you may do so to a local pit bull rescue. All right. Coming up on 4:30. Actually, it is 4:30, so time for a break, and Priscilla will be back with more news.
Are you elderly or disabled? Did you know each WRTA fixed route bus has a number of accessibility features such as a ramp to enter, a kneeler which can lower the bus, a securement area for wheelchairs and other mobility devices, priority seating for people with disabilities, electronic signage on the front, side, and rear exterior, a bicycle rack on the front exterior, an interior stop request sign, automated audio and visual stop announcements. Let us make your transportation needs easier and ride the bus with us. Call us with questions at 508-791-9782 or visit our website at www.therta.com.
And we're back. You're listening to Community News, Fitchburg Lemonster, a production of the Audio Journal. Okay, from Townsend. Music, food, and family fun planned. The Townsend Military Band will present an evening of music from the stage and screen during its Thursday, July 23rd concert on the Townsend Common. That's tomorrow. The performance is sponsored by the Amanda E. Dwight Entertainment Fund. The concert will be accompanied by a lawn party hosted by the Townsend Historical Society. Concertgoers can purchase hamburgers, hot dogs, popcorn, chips, and cold beverages, while children and families can enjoy games set up on the common. Several antique cars are also expected to be on display near the common during the evening. Under the direction of conductor Thomas Souza, the Townsend Military Band will perform from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. The band plans to continue its Thursday evening concert series on the Townsend Common through at least August 13th, weather permitting. At this time, no local organization has signed up to host the lawn party during the August 13 concert, said Betty May Tenney, band concert coordinator. Organizations interested in sponsoring that evening's lawn party are encouraged to contact me as soon as possible. Tenney can be reached by phone at 978-597-6495 or by email at Betty May, which is M-A-E, at townsendvfw.comcastbiz.net. Okay. And let's see. From AIR. AIR Scout Troop 2 is celebrating 100 years. Memorabilia past participants sought ahead of October event. This from AIR. Scout Troop 2 is commemorating a monumental milestone, 100 years since it was first formed in town in 1926. A celebration is scheduled for Saturday, October 17th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the AIR Gun and Sportsman Club at 255 Snake Hill Road that will feature historical displays, entertainment, scouting demonstrations, vendors, and more. To prepare for the event, organizers have been putting together history about the troop and are seeking people who have been involved in it over the years, as well as reconnecting with those who may have moved away from town or may still be in the area. AIR resident Maggie Durand serves on the Troop Leadership Committee, and her late father, Richard Durand, was the Troop Scoutmaster from 2009 to 2019. She has been on the committee for around a decade. Her husband is the Troop Treasurer, and the rest of the committee are parents of the Scouts who are currently involved. We're hoping to expand our outreach across the state and beyond, Maggie Durand said, of getting the word out as to as many people as possible about the centennial celebration. This is a huge milestone for Troop 2 and the town of AIR. Sarah Withy also lives in town and wrote a piece ahead of the exceptional event that the entire community is invited to for the AIR News, which she started a year ago. Not every scout troop reaches 100 years, but Troop 2 and AIR will celebrate this special milestone this fall and is inviting the community to come and enjoy, Withy penned. She reported that Maggie Durand and her husband are working to set up a history room for the October event, and that while Troop 2 has a website with many photos, this will be their first time setting up and sharing the material stories and stories in a public setting. We want this to be a community party. It's not just Troop 2 celebrating 100 years. This is community celebrating. Maggie Durand is quoted in the story. She shared some background on the town's scouting history in Withy's piece. Ayer had Troop 1 for a brief time, and then Troop 2 was established in 1926 as part of the Fitchburg Area Council before becoming part of the Nashua Valley Council in 1965. In 2018, the councils merged once again and are currently operating under the Heart of New England Council out of Rutland. Moore's Lumber and Hardware on West Main Street is the charter organization for Troop 2, and if you want to find the troop, they meet weekly at the Air Gun and Sportsman Club. Children ages 11 to 17 can participate in Scouts, and there is also Scouts BSA Troop 3 in town, in which the Air Fire Department supports. Many of the Scouts who participate in the Air Troops live in town, but some also come from other communities, and if they are younger, there's Air's Cub Scout Pack 32 for grades K through 5. They're hoping to have members of the community and former Scouts of Troop 2 look through photographs they have gathered and help identify the people in them by visiting troop2air.com/troop-2-history. And they're also looking for additional pictures as well as memorabilia to incorporate. The ultimate goal of the centennial celebration is to bring together people who may not have seen each other in 10, 20, or even 50 years. And anyone who would like more information or has something to contribute can email troop2air@gmail.com. And that two is a number two. Ayer is really amazing in that it has such a strong scouting culture for such a small town, Maggie Duran shared in Withy's story, adding that she thinks that 100th anniversary of Troop 2 is more exciting for the adults. When the current Scouts are older and look back, I think it's going to be really cool for them to see what they were part of. Sounds like fun. Okay, from Lancaster, the women behind the revolution, how Massachusetts housewives supported the Continental Army. The story of the American Revolution is often told through the battles fought by soldiers, but a program at the Thayer Memorial Library will shine a light on the women whose work at home helped sustain the fight for independence. Foodways historian Stacy Booth will present In Support of the Army, How the Housewives of Massachusetts Supported the Formation of the Continental Army Through Foodways, at 2 p.m. on Friday, July 24th, at Thayer Memorial Library, 717 Main Street. Booth will explore the vital role Massachusetts housewives played in feeding and supporting the Continental Army during the early years of the Revolutionary War. As local militia units evolved into a unified force under General George Washington, families at home were preserving food, preparing meals, and finding ways to keep soldiers supplied. The program will also examine how food and cooking became powerful tools of political protest as women responded to British taxation and policies that fueled the growing movement toward independence, Booth added. A foodways historian with nearly 20 years of experience, Booth specializes in 17th and 18th century New England cooking traditions and historical demonstrations. She previously worked at Plymouth Patuxent Museums and Cogshall Farm Museum, where she portrayed early American life through first- and third-person interpretation. Booth currently serves on the board of Colonel Bailey's 2nd Massachusetts Regiment, a Revolutionary War reenactment group that has participated in national events for more than 50 years. Over the past decade, she has traveled from Canada to Maryland, demonstrating hearth and campfire cooking, as well as baking in outdoor bread ovens at Living History events. She also operates Forgotten Recipes, a business that brings historical cooking programs and displays to libraries, museums, and historic homes throughout New England. Booth is currently pursuing a master's degree in gastronomy at Boston University. The program offers a unique look at an often overlooked chapter of Revolutionary War history, highlighting how everyday household work became an essential part of America's fight for independence. The contributions of these women are often overlooked, Booth said. I hope people leave with a new appreciation for how important their work was to the Revolutionary War. For more information or to register for this event, visit the library's calendar at thayermemoriallibrary.org. And for more information on Stacy Booth, visit revolution250.org. Okay. Excuse me. And let's see, from Leominster and Harvard, sing, dance, and laugh with the Toe Jam Puppet Band. Okay. The families looking for an afternoon of music, laughter, and audience participation can catch the Toe Jam Puppet Band during two upcoming library performances. The popular children's entertainers will perform, or actually performed yesterday, and will do so again tomorrow, 4 p.m. on Thursday, July 23rd, which is tomorrow, yes, at the Harvard Public Library, Four Pond Road. Known for blending live music, puppetry, storytelling, and comedy, co-founders Vinnie Lovegrove and Tom Poitras have been entertaining children and families for more than two decades with energetic, interactive performances. "Our shows are lively, high energy, and a little rowdy," Lovegrove said. "The kids are involved from start to finish. They even get the chance to toss laundry." The duo performs throughout New England several times each week, appearing regularly at libraries, festivals, schools, learning centers, and community events. The Toe Jam Puppet Band was created in 2001 after Poitras, a former singer with the punk rock band The Gluons, began writing songs for his infant son. Around the same time, he met Lovegrove, who had been performing with his Miracle Fish Puppet Theater since 1994. Together, they combine music and puppetry to create the family-friendly act. Their debut recording, first CD, sold more than 1,000 copies and was followed by Toe Jam Dance Party in 2003 and Toe Jam in Outer Space in 2008. The band has also supported children's causes through its partnership with the Massachusetts Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. Proceeds from the sale of its first album benefited the organization, which also awarded the group a grant for its creative arts playgroup. As for the unusual name, Lovegrove said it was chosen with children in mind. "We wanted kids to know right away that we're going to be silly and even a little gross," he said with a laugh. Lovegrove said performing for young audiences gives the pair the freedom to be imaginative while creating memories for families. "Bring your family and friends. Come and enjoy an afternoon of laughs with us," he said. We're sure you'll leave with a smile. For more information on each performance, visit the library's websites at leominsterpubliclibrary.org and harvardpubliclibrary.org. And for additional information on Toe Jam Puppet Band, visit toejampuppetband.com. Okay. Let's try to find some short here. Yes. From Fitchburg, Andrew LaMarche, now deputy chief at FSU. The Fitchburg University Police Department has announced the promotion of Andrew LaMarche to the rank of deputy chief. Deputy chief, yes. Deputy Chief LaMarche was sworn into his new role during a ceremony on July 12th at FSU's Hammond Hall's main lounge. Andrew LaMarche has spent nearly 15 years earning the trust of this university through steady leadership, professionalism, and an unwavering commitment to our students, staff, faculty, and visitors, said Fitchburg State University President Donna Hodge. "One of the things I value most about his journey is that it reflects what we hope every member of our community experiences here, the opportunity to grow, to lead, and to make a meaningful difference over time. It is a pleasure to congratulate Andrew on this well-deserved promotion, and I look forward to working with him as he helps lead our university police department into its next chapter." Reporting directly to Police Chief Michael Cloutier, Deputy Chief LaMarche now serves as second in command for the department. In this leadership role, LaMarche has assumed responsibility for managing daily department operations while continuing his oversight of patrol operations. "It's been a privilege to play a small part in Andrew's journey and watch him grow," said Chief Cloutier. "Seeing how he has developed from his first days at the State Police Academy into the leader standing before you today has been a truly remarkable experience. Andrew earned this promotion through years of self-reflection, hard work, and dedication, and everyone who has been part of his journey should be incredibly proud of his success." Deputy Chief LaMarche has served the Fitchburg State University community for nearly two decades. He began his career with the department as a police officer in 2007, later moving into leadership roles as an operations sergeant from 2015 to 2021, and most recently serving as operations lieutenant since November 2021. His well-rounded law enforcement career also includes valuable experience with both the Amherst College and Bolton Police Departments. In addition to his extensive practical experience, Lamash is highly credentialed. He holds a Bachelor's of Science degree in Criminal Justice from Worcester State University and is currently completing his Master of Science in Criminal Justice at Fitchburg State. His specialized certifications include MPTC Firearms Instructor, Taser ECW Instructor, Sexual Assault Investigator, and Internal Affairs Investigations. Okay, it's a little after 4:45. It's time to take our last break, and Stacy will be back to finish up the hour.
People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Building an inclusive workforce where individuals with disabilities are welcome is possible thanks to Mass Commission for the Blind. Partner with them to hire individuals who are blind or visually impaired and reach your workforce goals. The success of your organization depends on the diversity of your team. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450 or mass.gov/MCB.
And we're back to finish up the news for the Fitchburg and Leominster area on Audio Journal. And we've got one more obituary to read before we move on today. It's from Winchendon. Raymond George, or Ray Sidlow, 92, died peacefully in Gardner on July 17th after a period of declining health. Ray was born in Fitchburg on February 19, 1934. His Catholic faith took root at St. Joseph's Church in Fitchburg, where he began serving at the altar as a boy. At age 16, Ray entered the Missionaries of Our Lady of La Salette. He later professed as a religious brother and served in La Salette communities across New England for more than two decades. When he returned to Fitchburg, Ray resumed serving at St. Joseph. There, he met Mary Rose Therese Vautour. They married at St. Joseph's on August 21, 1983. Their marriage was grounded in faith, loyalty, and a deep love. In 1985, they welcomed twins, Scott and Andrea. Ray worked as a ward attendant at Foxborough State Hospital and as a color-matching assistant at Decotone in Fitchburg. From 1975 until retirement, he worked in custodial and facilities service at Lunenburg Public Schools, St. Joseph's School, St. Bernard's Activity Center, and Franklin Pierce College. In retirement, he served local children as a crossing guard for the Winchendon Public Schools. St. Vincent de Paul Parish in Baldwinville became Ray and Mary Rose's spiritual home. Ray was deeply faithful, but never only solemn. He was outgoing, playful, and happy to talk with nearly anyone. Younger parish families affectionately called him Party Man, while his tradition of placing American flags for Memorial Day and the 4th of July earned him another nickname, Flagman. An amateur radio operator, Ray was known by the call sign WA1MQB, Whiskey Alpha One Mother's Quiet Baby. He loved the French language and its songs, New England lighthouses, classic westerns, World War II films, The Patriots, Travel, Cabernet Sauvignon, and an occasional cask-aged scotch. Ray leaves his wife, Mary Rose Sidlow of Winchendon, his son, Scott Raymond of Tiverton, Rhode Island, his daughter, Andrea Marie Therese Metcalf of Ashburnham, as well as 5 grandchildren. Calling hours will be held from 5 to 7 on July 24th at Stone Lado Funeral Home in Winchendon. A mass will be celebrated at 10 on Saturday at St. Vincent de Paul Church in Baldwinville. Burial will follow at St. Joseph Cemetery in Fitchburg. And if you'd like to make a memorial contribution, you may do that to the St. Vincent de Paul Parish in Baldwinville. All right, we've finished up the obituaries for this week, so let's move on to some other news. From Fitchburg, free summer meals for kids. The hardworking school district nutrition services staff fed over 1,000 kids on a recent weekday as part of the summer meals offered in the city during the warmer months. It's all a part of the USDA Summer Food Service Program, a federally funded program established in 1975 to address food insecurity in low-income areas. This program has been a staple in Fitchburg since the early 2000s and ensures that children and teens 18 and under have easy access to no-cost meals when school is not in session. Fitchburg Public Schools Nutrition Services Manager David Semenza shared last year. Operations Manager Nancy Crowley oversees the day-to-day operations of the Summer Meals program, which she said is in full swing and runs through August 14th. There are 6 locations in the city where you can get meals Monday to Friday, except when there's inclement weather. And I'm going to read those locations in case anyone listening knows a hungry child. Babe DeConza Memorial Park at Salem and Beacom Streets. You can get lunch from noon to 12:30. Coolidge Park on Townsend Street, breakfast from 9 to 9:45, and lunch from 11:15 to noon. Green Street Playground on North Street, lunch 11:15 to 11:45. Gustav Johnson State Pool on Winooseneck Road, lunch 12:45 to 1:15 p.m. The Park Hill Playground on Pratt Road, breakfast 9 to 9:45 and lunch 11:30 to 12:30. And finally, Rangold Park on Rangold Avenue, lunch 11:50 to 12:20. Anyone 18 or under is eligible, regardless of the city or town of residence or the school they go to. There's no sign-up or registration. Simply go to one of the listed sites during the meal serving time and look for people in Summer Eats T-shirts. Any children can come to one of our open sites and get breakfast or lunch. No questions asked, Crowley said. The only requirement is that the child needs to be present and the meal must be eaten on the site. General Manager David Semenza reported that they serve approximately 30,000 meals to kids who live in and around the city each summer. For more than 25 years, Fitchburg has proudly participated in the USDA Summer Food Service Program, ensuring children and teens have access to free, nutritious meals while school is out. We are honored to continue this tradition of serving our city. Wow, that's great. All right, here's an article from Ashburnham. Not sure if I'll finish it all, but you'll get the idea at any rate. The administration of Governor Maura Healey and the town of Ashburnham joined state, local, and nonprofit partners on Tuesday, July 14th to celebrate the restoration of a free-flowing Whitman River for the first time in generations, saying that the removal of the Whitney Pond Dam marks a major milestone for river health, public safety, and climate resilience in central Mass. Projects like the Whitney Pond Dam removal make our community safer, strengthen our environment, and help Massachusetts prepare for the impacts of climate change, said Governor Healey. We're proud to partner with Ashburnham and local organizations to restore this river, protect wildlife habitat, and create a lasting resource for the community. Over several years, project partners invested significant resources to remove the aging dam, to restore the river, and establish the new Whitney Pond Dam Conservation Area, which features trails, benches, and educational signs. In addition to more than $60,000 in funding from the Mass Division of Ecological Restoration, the $1.4 million project received state investments from the Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs Dam and Seawall Repair, the Municipal Vulnerability Preparedness Program, and the Executive Office of Economic Development's Inland Dredge Pilot Program. In 2025, the state led the nation in dam removal with 15 dams taken down, including Whitney Pond Dam. This supports the Massachusetts biodiversity goals, which set a target to remove 10% of the state's 3,000 dams by 2050. This project is a significant achievement for the town and the Whitman River. By removing the dam, we're not only safeguarding South Ashburnham from catastrophic flooding and reducing municipal costs, but also restoring a cooler, oxygen-rich habitat essential for the native brook trout living in the river, said Jessica Versi Powell. Yes, and that's all we have time for that article. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy of our program schedule in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions are available on our website or go to the Audio Journal app on your phone. I'm Stacy Lanier. I've been reading today with Priscilla Lanigan. As always, we thank you for listening.
This is Bird Note. You're hearing the song of one of Hawaii's rarest forest birds, the Akeapula Owl. This male Akeapula Owl, or Aki for short, is singing in an isolated grove of trees on the slopes of an active volcano. In Hawaii, such groves are known as kipukas. A kipuka is an island of native forest surrounded not by water, but by recent lava flows. Kipukas are green oases in a sea of black lava. They're critical areas of native habitat, home to species found nowhere else on the planet. The aki possesses what one observer has called a Swiss Army knife bill. Its short, straight lower beak is paired with a long, slender, curved, and flexible upper beak. As it forages up and down tree trunks and across the branches, the short half hammers like a woodpecker's bill, and the upper probes for insects under the bark and lichen. The species is found only on the Big Island of Hawaii. Some of the roughly 1,000 akis left on Earth live and breed in kapukas on the lower slopes of Mauna Loa, Hawaii's largest active volcano. In living with a rumbling volcano, aki and kapuka perform one of nature's most remarkable balancing acts. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. This episode is brought to you by American Bird Conservancy. ABC is dedicated to conserving wild birds and their habitats throughout the Americas. Learn more at abcbirds.org.
Worcester Regional Transit Authority, also known as the WRTA, is a regional transit system that services the city of Worcester and the surrounding 36 communities in the central Massachusetts area, with a bus fleet that includes all-electric buses, as well as many diesel-electric hybrid buses. The second largest regional transit authority in Massachusetts, the WRTA offers reliable, comfortable, and safe transportation for traveling to work, shopping, school, medical appointments, appointments and leisure activities. The WRTA also provides paratransit service for the elderly and disabled, as well as a variety of special services for those groups in the entire service area. For more information, visit the website at www.therta.com or call 508-791-9782.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.